from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Good, Gabe. How are you? Congratulations, by the way. When we last spoke, we were predicting what was going to happen in the semifinal game. And I was predicting that the U.S. would lose.
Yes.
And you were predicting, the great patriot and seer, really, that you are.
Yeah.
You were predicting that the U.S. would come back and win. And you were right, and I was wrong. And it was unbelievably great.
And what I also predicted, and it was like halftime at the moment, I did say Steph Curry was going to continue his hot first half into the second half. And I think we saw that.
I think we did.
So
twofold. It was great. It's interesting because, you know, in what was, I think, a fantastic Olympics, really, for basketball to elevate itself to be one of the memorable things, just because, let's be honest, I think people watch the Olympics more for the other stuff, right? But for basketball to become one of the memorable things, it really had to unfold in memorable fashion, right? And it absolutely did. I mean, it was magnificent to be able to see those players perform at that level on that stage. And, you know, the TV ratings were terrific. I saw that NBA final TV ratings were basically 12 million, and the ratings for that game were like 19 million. So
yep.
Dramatically better than the NBA Finals. It was tremendous.
Yeah, and it's just what we'll remember the entire run by is LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant in their last hurrah, potentially. And we'll see what happens in L.A. in 2028. I don't expect any of those guys to be on the team. Although if LeBron decides, hey, I want to play one more time, I don't think anybody's going to say no. But that's what we'll remember it by, right? Probably the best big three performance in the history of USA basketball.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's 100%, and it is interesting that those players who were so magnificent and, you know, turned Jason Tatum into a spectator, right? I mean, that's what really did happen. They turned Jason Tatum into a spectator. Those players all are in the West. All are, you know, all are on teams that are ostensibly competing with the Grizzlies, and all of them, if you're asking Grizzlies fans, you know, about the teams they worry about, it's none of the teams that are on those three, right. You know, lead. It's kind of amazing that we feel like, those teams, that's not the real competition. We got them. It is a reminder that, you know, I don't know. Like, obviously, there's a difference between winning an Olympics and, you know, and being healthy and ready to go for 82 games. But it may be premature. I don't think in the case of the Lakers, but Golden State has obviously, you know, changed up their mix this year. And, you know, I like what the Suns have done this summer. So I was cheering for them, certainly, when they were playing for Team USA. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. During the, you know, regular season, once that fires up.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because Connor and I actually had an interesting discussion about this earlier. Of the teams in the Western Conference with this roster that we have here in Memphis, that we think, okay, Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., we feel like they'll be mainstays and they should reach expectations, although we're going to have to see that. Like, who are the teams you're scared of? We came up with Thunder, Timberwolves, Nuggets in particular, and I guess the Mavs as well, but I don't think, like, the matchup against the Mavs is less scary than those other three.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously it's the Thunder, number one, and then I think the Timberwolves and Denver. It's a little arrogant to think you're not worried about the Mavs, given the playoff.
No, I get it. I understand.
Not just the playoff run they have, but also everything post-trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
Everything post-trade deadline, they were terrific. And they changed their mix at the trade deadline, and they were terrific. So I think you have to certainly a team you worry about. And I guess my point is maybe we're a little premature to write off, you know, Steph and the Warriors.
Sure.
Looked pretty damn good last week.
Right. No, I get it. I mean, Buddy Hield, that's my one thing. Buddy Hield, are we really buying it? Can we buy into that?
No, it isn't honestly so much Buddy Hield.
Just Steph and Dre for me right now. And then, Buddy, you're going to have to show me something, brother.
I'll be interested to see what D'Anthony Melton and Kyle do, you know, with him. I think those are good pieces to put around them. I mean, in the end, it's pieces around the stars, right? And I think they've got some useful, interesting pieces. I think they put around the stars. And then obviously they have some young players who they hope will continue to develop. I haven't the way that they would have wished, right? But we saw some stuff taken last year. So, I don't know. I still think the Grizzlies should be picked ahead of them. I don't know that they will be by the consensus. And I was so astonished, and I'll be honest, I mean, not really outraged. How outraged can it be about what anyone says, about an off season? But David Aldridge, longtime NBA writer who writes for The Athletic now, he ranked, and maybe you've already talked about this, but he ranked the off seasons best to worst in the NBA. And this today was the bottom 10 that he released. And the very worst off season in the entire league was the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, which I couldn't get my mind around.
Well,
the Clippers lose Paul George.
Right.
Denver loses a significant piece, and you're saying the worst offseason in the entire league was the Grizzlies?
Isn't that almost strictly what you feel about Zach Edey? Almost strictly? Right?
Well, what's interesting is that, I don't know, he said, like Zach Edey, you know, he says, whatever, he said, just didn't do much. No, well, they didn't do much, because but they didn't lose anything. I mean, if you want to say that the Grizzlies had a, you know, solid C+, B-, because they didn't do much, that's fine. But the worst, you know, when you're comparing to teams that actually did get dramatically worse, you can't argue that the Grizzlies got dramatically worse. If anything, you could just say, they basically stayed the same. You know, really all they did was trade. If you go back to the trade deadline, all they really did, or whatever, to the offseason, all they really did was trade Steven Adams for Zach Edey. Right?
Yeah.
That's all they really did. And but that's not a negative thing. You know, that's not unless you think he's trash, and David Aldridge did not indicate at all that he thinks he's trash. So I'll be honest, I didn't understand it.
Yeah,
I didn't understand. I thought it was nonsensical.
Yeah, that boggles the mind. I will say that. On the 2028 USA Olympic team, Ja Morant, what are your thoughts on that? Will he be on that team? Obviously, there's a lot of time between now and then. A lot of things can happen. But, you know, based on what we know about Ja Morant and Nike and USA Basketball, would you say yes or no right this second?
I guess I would say yes, but I think consensus is no, right? I think I would say yes, because I have great faith in Ja Morant's. First of all, maybe it's premature, but I have some real comfort that his, you know, the extracurricular days are behind
him. I agree.
So start there. And then if that's true, I have real confidence that, that when he plays, he is one of the best players in the league. And then you throw the Nike stuff on top of it. That helps. But, you know, Nike didn't help him this year, you know, because he hasn't put himself in position to be one of the players to be considered. But as long as he does, and I think his talent will indicate that he will, I expect him to be on. But, I mean, Kevin Pelton did a, you know, projection, and he was just sort of in the others receiving votes category over at ESPN. So I think there's a lot of, you know, show me now connected with the Grizzlies, and I think that's perfectly fair given what we've seen.
Yeah, I do think that, and I know that people have tried to, you know, distance themselves from the politics. The Nike contract and the Nike shoe, I think, goes a long way with Ja Morant, and the amount of it seems to be flying off the shelf for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help this year. You know,
sure.
You have to be in the conversation.
You can't have a torn labrum
right.
Either.
But even had he been healthy, he would not have been in the conversation this year, right? He had not played at a level that he was going to beat out anyone who was playing this year. He has to be healthy. He has to be on good behavior, and he has to be awesome. And I think there's no reason he won't be all of those things, right? I mean, so I actually don't have a lot of concern about best behavior. I have very little concern that if he plays, he'll be awesome. And so then the only thing is, will he be healthy? So I think I would say likely. You know, I think next year you'll be looking, 4 years from now, I think Zach Edey will be playing for Canada, right? I think yeah. Zach Edey will be playing for Canada. Brandon Clark could well be. That's a little, you know, closer call. We'll see. I think, you know, Santi should be playing for Spain. And I think Ja will be, you know, likely playing for the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Now, AP Top 25 College Football Poll came out yesterday. Do you do any reviews on these things? Do you much care? Do you worry about snubs? Do you worry about who's overvalued, undervalued?
I'm a talk radio guy.
I get it, but like, but I'm talking about like in the preseason, how much do you really care?
Do I really get outraged? I mean, what you notice is, you know, there's the talking points. For the last however many years, the national champion has come from the top seven.
Yep.
Right.
And there's only two examples in the past 20 years, I think.
Right. So these are literally, if you've listened to any talk radio since this thing came out, I've heard mostly two talking points. Well, you realize that in the last 20 years, the national championship always comes from the top seven. And then the other one you hear is that in the last 21 years, only one time has a team in the top 10 not finished out. There's at least one team in the top 10 not finished outside of the top 25. Which is that team going to be? And so you can identify which of the top seven teams is going to win the national championship and which of those top 10 teams is going to drop out of the top 25. I will tell you that Georgia or Ohio State will win the national championship.
Sure.
And because of the quarterback situation, I think Georgia, not exactly a creative pick, is the best, is the one I feel most confident, just because I feel more confident about the quarterback. And obviously Michigan is the obvious choice to drop out of the top 25. If you had to pick one that's in the top 10, who's going to drop out of the top 25? Is it Michigan?
Yeah, I would say that. I would keep an eye on Florida State, but they're in the ACC, so it's a lot easier. But yeah, Michigan would be the team I pick. You know who my dark horse is, though? And I don't even know if they finish unranked, so this is not quite like the full discussion. But Texas, I think, is overvalued as hell. They lost so much last year. They lost a tight end, both wide receivers, running back. They have a running back that tore his ACL already. Their whole defense, I mean, they're two big players, Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, and, you know, no pun intended by saying big, but their D tackles are completely gone. I know that they have 4 and 5 stars to replace them, and they recruit really well, but they have not really in the 21st century been the type of program that's been able to replace those guys year over year. I think Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan have been able to fit that billing. Maybe Notre Dame to a certain extent even. Texas has been one of those teams that, you know, we get them to the top of the mountaintop and we expect them to stay there, and they don't quite do what we expect them to do. They don't quite stay at that level.
Well, I think I think with Texas, there was skepticism last year. Can they get to the top of the mountaintop? Or, you know, are they elite again? And because no one, like, whenever they'd win a big game, like, yeah, I've seen this before. Well,
right.
last year they proved they were elite. And so now it's, can they really be elite 2 years in a row? And that's fair. You know, I can understand your skepticism about it. I still think, you know, Michigan loses their head coach, Michigan loses its quarterback, you know, Michigan loses a fair amount of, you know, all that talent.
The dark cloud over the program in general.
Now, Michigan has a couple of tremendous, you know, players up front on defense. Quarterback is an athletic freak, although raw. Like, we'll see. I think, yes, and then whether all those quote-unquote distractions prove to be distractions, although... Let's be honest. There were plenty of distractions flying around Michigan last year. I think, and it didn't seem to get in the way. I think the distractions argument is much less persuasive to me than, you know, what has Michigan lost.
Yeah, I agree.
And what the competition will be, which is stiff.
Yeah, I still say this. They have the ability to do sort of what they did offensively and defensively last year. Will Johnson, best corner in the country. Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant, probably best 1-2 punch as D tackles in the entire NCAA this year. They still have the ability to play similarly to last year, but we'll see how it all plays out. Do you get the sense, because this is one of my things, I think Alabama... Rarely would we ever have this conversation because Nick Saban's been there for the last 20 years. But Alabama feels undervalued to me. Do you share those sentiments with me, or do you? I know they're at number five. They're a top five team, and I did see this stat. Here's my favorite stat from yesterday. Last time they were ranked number five was 2011 in the preseason poll, and that year, Nick Saban won a national championship defeating Texas. So that's the last time they were ranked number five. So they have some. They have some good.
What do you
juju
think of
on that number five preseason ranking?
What do you think of Milroe? Obviously, he had a you know, hell of a comeback year last year, and now with Kalen DeBoer, you know, Kalen DeBoer has, let's be honest, a better reputation. Maybe that's not fair. He's a very fine reputation for being a quarterback whisperer, right? And so
I'll tell you what I think about Jalen Milroe. He's my Heisman pick. Yes.
Wow.
That's what I think of Jalen Milroe with Kalen DeBoer, right? Jalen Milroe on the surface with, you know, Bill O'Brien or somebody like that don't necessarily feel as great. Kalen DeBoer has been able to, with Michael Penix, like I think somewhat similar skill sets where you have that deep ball you can uncork, sometimes inconsistent in the intermediate. They had some legs, and we saw Kalen DeBoer in the transition he made with Michael Penix Jr. from Indiana to Washington. Indiana, he was running the ball a whole lot, tore his ACL. He completely flipped the script and said, okay, we're going to air this thing out. We have good wide receivers. Let's make it happen. Now, one thing that could work against Jalen Milroe, I don't think he's got the wide receiver talent there. They're going to have to rely on that five-star freshman, I think, a whole lot, Ryan Williams. So that could be a little bit of a difference in the Michael Penix comparison from last year. But Kalen DeBoer knows how to get these things done. And when you look at Jalen Milroe, last year, he was second in the SEC behind the eventual Heisman winner in completions for 20-plus yards downfield. And we know that Kalen DeBoer can exploit that part of the field. So I'm very high.
You're clearly bullish on...
Very bullish.
Very clearly bullish on Milroe. And I see the logic in it.
Yeah, and I think that his O-line's pretty damn good, too. I think that might be the best O-line in the country if they put it all together. They got the talent. They just weren't there was something missing early last season with that offensive line. It was not a normal Alabama offensive line.
Let me ask you the question that Jason John asked me today. It was fun when we saw the stadium getting knocked down at first, right? Oh, it's exciting progress. Like, oh, look, there did it. Now that you see it looking as sort of raw and empty and ugly as it is, I don't mean that in a negative. I mean it is a construction site. Now it's very clear.
Raw, empty, and ugly. So trying to say that's not a negative thing.
It is a negative, but I mean it's just obviously there is positive. They are building it, you know, constructing a new stadium. It will be glorious. It is needed, and there's no way to do it in an off season, right? So there's no way to avoid this. I'm not, you know, but. It was interesting, like, you know, when they had the press conference announcing this, that, you know, there's going to be construction vehicles there during the games. Are you worried about the game day experience?
Yes, absolutely. I've said that from the beginning. I hate that this is the year with the most expectation in Memphis football history and you're going to have half the stadium gone. Like, I can't get over that. That bothers me. And I'm going to say this as lightly as I possibly can. having half your stadium knocked down and having it look ugly when you're playing games at home, there's an unseriousness about it. Am I fair in saying that? Is that a fair way of putting it? That just seems to be an unseriousness about it.
I don't know if there is an unseriousness about it. I know this, that I think Memphians will understand what's happening and why, and will understand, you know, progress.
But I'm not talking about Memphians. I'm talking about the national view when they see it.
That's what I'm saying. I was going to say, Memphians will understand it. They'll know what's happening. But yes, if you're flipping around on a Thursday night or whatever, and you was at, what the hell is wrong with that stadium? What are they playing in? You know, I mean, it was Phil Jackson famously said about Memphis. He said, going to Memphis is like going to Dresden after the war. And that's what the stadium looks like. It looks like Dresden after the war. Like, it looks like it was bombed out right now. Again, it's progress. I applaud them. But so I don't think it's unseriousness, because I don't know that there was any other way to do this. Although it is interesting. It is interesting. You do wonder. For the longest time, we expected this financing package had to go through so they could start as soon as the season ended, you know, get the bulldozers going. Well, it only started 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. Like, what was the, you know, had there been a different timeline, could it have been more attractive? I don't really know. And, I mean, obviously they have plans for making it as pleasant as possible for the fans who are visiting. And there may be a certain, you know, we're all in this together. You know, we will remember these years of the half constructed stadium. But it's kind of amazing. You drive by now and you see these yawning holes in the stadium and realize we're 2 weeks away from football.
Yeah, and they're breaking out the back of the old press box, though.
Yeah,
I think us here sitting in these seats and me talking to you, I think you're pretty happy about that.
It was not the greatest press box. I didn't mind it. I never insist on a, you know, whatever.
You don't need to roll out the red carpet for all the media members all the time.
No, the worst part of the press box was the elevator, honestly.
Yeah.
Just the elevator up. People would routinely get stuck on it. You know, dignitaries would get stuck on the elevators. And so that was not great. The press box was fine. I always had a seat. And for a long time, we had rendezvous ribs. So I wasn't complaining.
Yeah. Now, a couple of things I have to end this conversation with. One, Elon Musk and Donald Trump on X last night. It's hilarious to see them do that. I can't get over that. I didn't watch. I tried to listen for a little bit. Elon Musk for 3 hours asking questions is painful. It is incredibly painful. He may be good at business. He may make okay cars, although sometimes they have some manufacturing error. But he cannot. He's not a good interviewer. So I'll skip past that.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The to have a guy, quote unquote, interviewing you, who is giving millions and millions to your campaign, you're not getting the hard hitting stuff.
And then
it's funny though. I really one of the things I was driving back from my high school reunion this weekend, and I was listening to interviews with surrogates for both parties, and the idea that these interviews are shaping. The interviews with the candidates is one thing, but like so much of this is just. Everyone has their talking points. They want to get their talking points out. It doesn't feel like a thoughtful discussion of the issues
at all.
It's just gotcha stuff. You know, who's going to stumble? Who's going to whatever? You know, I guess the debates will be interesting. The last debate was really critical because it did expose, you know, Biden's frailties as a candidate. Look at that last debate changed everything. However you feel about it, that last debate was a catalyst for why we are where we are. So there's certainly something to be said for the candidates being available. But the gamesmanship and the gotcha stuff in this, I'm not that
don't participate
in it. Yeah. And then last night I didn't, I, I'm a fan of Elon Musk building a big computer sure. in Memphis and bring economic. There's not much else about Elon Musk that appeals
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, 3 hours worth of just sort of gotcha stuff, though. That's what that was, and it was on X Spaces, Twitter Spaces.
Yeah, I didn't.
There was a picture of Donald Trump with just his phone in front of him speaking to his phone. That's not ideal. I don't think that's how we've done it in the past. And then final thing, are you a Bayou fan? Bayou Bar and Grill fan?
You know, I think I've only been once. I'm a fan of the fact that there's a restaurant that looked like it was, you know, who knows, it could have gone the way of other restaurants and closed its doors. And folks, you know, new owners have breathed life into it. I once went because I heard about a chicken sandwich on the menu. And this was
Zydeco chicken sandwich?
Yeah.
Yep.
That was it.
That's the one.
I don't know, is it still on the menu?
Yes, and the Zydeco wings are just like they're phenomenal. They're really good.
I'm a sucker for rankings and lists and stuff like that. And so it was back during the famous chicken sandwich wars, the Wendy's, you know, Popeyes, Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich wars, and someone did a ranking of the best local chicken sandwiches. And that one was mentioned. And so I went and I had it, and I remember it as being delicious.
Yes.
I just sat there and ate my chicken sandwich and remembered it as being delicious. I haven't been back, but I may well go back. It's still on the menu?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and the wings. I suggest the wings too.
Really
yeah.
good wings. Okay.
Yeah, although you're from Buffalo, so I don't know how you'll feel about the sauce on the wings. It is what it is. But I do like to see, too, like they had two former employees help buy the thing. Like, that's cool. That's a cool little come-up story for those people.
No, it was good. I like to see it, and I like to see a restaurant.
I was always asked during when NIL was just coming about if I had one place during my college career
that
would give me an NIL deal. It was Bayou. I went there every week, probably twice.
Really?
Love that place. Just absolutely love it. So good.
That's a good data.
I don't even think they have a bad thing on the menu, personally. A lot of fried bar food, but that's right up my alley.
There's nothing wrong with fried bar. I will not hear anyone say a negative word about fried bar food.
I hear you. Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
No problem.
That's Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X from the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. And he is a columnist at the Daily Memphian. Connor, are you a Bayou fan? Have you enjoyed some Bayou in your day?
I was at the Bayou 2 weeks ago.
Okay. What do you order? What's the go-to at Bayou?
I like to get the hot spinach and artichoke dip.
Oh, that's good stuff.
So good.
That's beautiful.
So good. And then I usually stick to the gumbo, to be quite honest.
They even have some damn good burgers.
But I've had, like, the shrimp po' boy, like, all of their po' boys are really good. I agree with you. There is not much on the menu that is bad.
Seeing that news after thinking it was going to, you know, collapse and having, you know, you have some employees step up, cough up some money to go buy the place, that was like... That was music to my ears, man. I'm so happy about you staying open. I cannot begin to express to you how elated I am that 30-plus years is not going down the drain at Bayou Bar and Grill.
Agreed.
Now, let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, I want to talk about something that's making the news in Major League Baseball. Jaron Duran, who plays for the Red Sox, for Connor Dunning's Red Sox, he's their left fielder. He's been suspended 2 games for using an anti-gay slur aimed at a fan during a 10-2 loss against the Astros on Sunday. Now, the Red Sox have announced that Duran's salary from the suspension will be donated to PFLAG, the Federation of Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. We'll sort of break down that situation. He had a response, but I think there's a discussion to be had about intent and forgiveness when it comes to Jaron Duran, again, the left fielder for the Red Sox. We'll talk about that next, 92.9 FM ESPN. Jaron Duran has been caught in the news, and it's because he's been suspended for 2 games for using an anti-gay slur aimed at a fan during a 10-2 loss against the Astros on Sunday. Now, the Red Sox, as I mentioned before the break, announced that Duran's salary from the suspension will be donated to the PFLAG, the Federation of Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. What occurred on Sunday should not occur. What was said by the fan? Tennis racket, you need a tennis racket. And he was going after him the entire game. It was sort of the Happy Gilmore, the guy with the bucket hat thing going on. And Jaron Duran responded like he shouldn't have. He said, "Shut up, you effing F." And it was the homophobic slur. Now, I want to play this. It's some sound. in his response after the MLB handed down his two-game suspension and made their announcement. And I want you to pay attention to his tone and the words he's saying, because I want to be able to discuss them after.
A heckler heckling me, you know, the entire game, and I just let the moment get the best of me and just said something that I shouldn't be saying.
What was your reaction to the suspension?
That's not the most important thing right now. It's just trying to be better and learn from my mistake of what I said is the most important thing right now.
Jared, did you know in the moment you had said the wrong word? Did it register?
Yeah, I actually apologized to the umpire and the catcher for my actions because they were right there. They heard me say it, but I'm assuming they cut the mic because of my inappropriate word, so it wasn't picked up, but I know that I was apologizing to them for the word I had said.
Now, it's kind of funny. You get these situations that unfold sometimes when guys are angry. Again, he was losing 10-0 at the time, and guys go after people, use language like this, and you want to be mad at them after. You want to sit there and hold them accountable and, you know, hate on them a little bit. You want to, you know, see what their response is if they act accordingly. But, Connor, I watched that response yesterday, and you know what my reaction was? What a damn sweetheart, man. Like, I hate to be that guy. Listening to me, they asked, what's the suspension? What do you think of the suspension? That's not the most important thing right now. After he's apologizing to the catcher and the umpire for having said such foul language. Now, he was angry in the moment. He said it. Should have never been said. But I do think that there are times in our society where intent needs to be taken into consideration. I don't think in any way, shape, or form Jaren Duran put that word out there to go after the gay community. I don't think he put that word out there to allow hate to perpetuate on our lesbian and gay community. There's certain situations where I do think people go overboard and try to put hate out there and aim it at the gay community. I look at Harrison Butker's speech that everyone on one side was praising, and he doesn't have to face any type of, issue for that. Even though he went after the gay community, used dangerous words to go after the gay community, and allowed that hate that people have for that community to perpetuate. He's not going to face anything for that, but Jaren Duran says one word, and now it feels like an uproar. He's got to be held accountable. And I don't mind him being held accountable for the situation. But I also think, based on his response, based on the action and the intent itself, this should be a guy that should be forgiven almost immediately. I know, Connor, I don't know how you feel about the situation. This is from your hometown team, but this feels like a guy who has the best intentions in his heart, had a slip up, the forgiveness should come just as fast as the punishment
came. Am I from Boston all of a sudden? Hometown team? No, born and raised Memphis.
Did I say hometown
you
team?
You said hometown
team. Oh, well, I mean your favorite team.
Wicked smart. No, it's, you know, this is a word that, in my opinion, doesn't have a place in society anymore. And he had a frustrating moment. He's a young guy. He made a mistake, and he's being held accountable, but he also accepted the responsibility for his actions. And that's why, it doesn't seem like people are going after him much at all anymore, because his apology was exactly what you hoped it was. And I think that the Red Sox response as an organization was exactly what it was, because at the end of the day, even if he didn't have any malicious intent toward the gay community with his comment, there still may be a young Boston Red Sox fan who is in that community and has to hear, you know, potentially his favorite player or somebody that he looks up to use that word, which is in many cases used to be hateful toward their community. So I think that it was an appropriate response from the Red Sox, from Jaren Duran. And at the end of the day, this was a mistake that we can all kind of move on from, because he accepted responsibility. And I think that I don't expect it to happen again. And I don't think that this is who he is as a person.
This is where I come with intent, right? And I brought up the Harrison Butker situation for a good example.
I don't know if those are...
But if you put them side by side, Harrison Butker, I know he's speaking his mind. He didn't use the foul language. But you're talking about a guy who did absolutely call being gay or lesbian the deadly sin. He called it the sinful pride, or the deadly sinful pride. Which, quite frankly, is a dangerous use of...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Rhetoric in that situation that, in my opinion, should call for some level of accountability and responsibility being taken, but he doesn't have to take responsibility for that. Jaren Duran, in this situation, I know he used a slur. It's a little bit different in that regard, but he has to take responsibility. He has to have 2 days of his salary completely put off to the side and donated. I just think that in this society, we have blurred these lines and confused right from wrong. We've confused what needs to actually be held accountable and what needs to be forgiven relatively soon. We just have blurred these lines, and it's just confusing to me at this point in time.
Yeah, to be honest with you, yeah, I understand the point that you're trying to make. I'm not sure the two are comparable to
me. Not fully comparable.
There are a lot of differences in them. I don't agree with really anything that Harrison Butker said, but I do think that it matters that it was a speech he was giving. He was asked to be there. There are a few things that, yes, what
where
he was saying,
the line
there was
is
dangerous
when you invite
rhetoric.
Hate.
He invite. Yes, I agree with all of that. But it gets into free speech stuff there,
which, even though
it was things that I very much disagreed with that he was saying, and I do think that they could be deemed dangerous. I think the slur is that's the difference. That's the difference that we're dealing with here. So, you know, if Harrison Butker had said a slur, we'd be having a different conversation. I also think in the court of public opinion, he got, you know, dragged through the mud a lot. Now
where
you
Jaren
can see
Duran,
on the other side of it.
Less.
I think that's kind of where I'm coming from, is that I can just say the way that Boston, like people that live in the city of Boston, it appears under the Red Sox social media posts, some of them had a large reaction to it that was unfortunate. However, I think that baseball fans at large, sports fans at large, Duran fans at large, most Red Sox fans, it seems like everybody's like, yeah, we get it. We understand why this happened. And you can use it as an example of, listen, we are in 2024 now. This word does not need to be used. Even if it was a mistake by somebody that you don't think that is their heart, I guess, if you want to put it that way, it still has no place in sports today. And I know that it might be corny, but I keep going back to, especially in a city like Boston, that word has been used as a weapon toward the gay community. And there are Red Sox fans who are a part of that community, and there is just no place to have one of your star upcoming players say that. Now, all of that being said, his response was exactly what you hoped it would have been. He knocked it out of the park. He took responsibility for it. He didn't try to make excuses.
No.
We all have frustrating moments in life. Every single day, we're all going through things that others may not know about. But we can control our own language. We can control the words that we use. He's a grown man. He used the improper word. He took his punishment like he should, and we will move on from it. To be quite honest, I don't think that we will probably talk about this story again a week from now. You know what I mean? So it was just an unfortunate moment, but I think everyone involved handled it pretty well, and hopefully it can lead to, you know, that community feeling like, okay, at least the Red Sox, you know, they're not trying to exclude us. There wants to be an inclusion there, because we know the Red Sox have a tricky history with everything, with kind
of
everything. And they're not shying away from that. They're saying, listen, that is not who we are anymore. We welcome this community, and I think that's good.
Yep, no, we...
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, I'm a little bit sad today. Connor, I need you to go ahead and play my music bed here. This is really tough. It's a really tough day for me, man. One of the best college football players, in my opinion, of all time. The best highlight tape a millennial football player could ever watch. And I think it's even carried over to Gen Z. I think it's carried over to everybody who plays football. Tavon Austin has retired from the NFL after, I believe, 11 years in the National Football League. Now, his NFL career never really lived up to what it should have. But you know what? There's one thing you can never take away from Tavon Austin. It's that 20-minute highlight tape from his days at West Virginia. Now, Connor, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but I think if we're going to liken it to anything in basketball, for example, we could go to the John Wall hoop mixtape. But you hear this sound, you hear this music bed, this instrumental from Hell and Back by Kid Ink, and you know exactly what you relate it to. And I know there's some people out there that can't relate to me on this level, but this was something even as an offensive lineman I watched nearly every night.
If you are a man or even a woman around our age and you like sports and football, this is 100% a mixtape that you have seen. And I think that the correct comparison is the John Wall hoops mixtape, which both of them went triple platinum on every college campus across
the world.
I'm
going to look this up.
Do you know how much fun it was to have a couple beers and be like, man, that was awesome?
Have you seen the Tavon Austin highlight tape?
You know the Dahmer show where he's like holding the knife at people?
Yes. That was watch Tavon Austin. Here are Tavon Austin highlights.
Do you remember Seventh Woods?
Oh, I remember Seventh Woods. Tavon Austin, let's see here. His highlight tape.
It's got to be like 10 plus mil, right?
24 million views. And what's crazy, it was 10 minutes. He's got a 20-minute highlight from high school that was crazy as well. But it's 10 minutes of strictly his senior year. You know how hard that is to do? It's impossible. It's like not even a plausible thing. And somehow he did it.
I mean, don't receivers, like realistically, how much action does a receiver see during a game? Like,
and he played some running back for them too.
Like 3 minutes total.
I remember being a young St. Louis Rams fan, and he was supposed to be like the draft pick they made. They ended up making that draft pick. I can't begin to express to you how excited I was when that was made, because I'd been watching that highlight tape, and it was brand new then. I'd been watching that highlight tape almost every night leading up to the NFL draft that year. So we say goodbye to the highlight king of the sport of football, Tavon Austin, today. He gave us some good memories, my brother. I can't wait for the next step. Cannot wait for the next step. But the next step on this show is to get to hour number three. And you know what we do every single Tuesday? Bring on one of my favorite guests. That'd be Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast with me. We are a co-host. We'll talk some Tiger football, a little bit of NFL next.
Memphis' number one place for sports. This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis, flagship home of the Memphis Grizzlies. 92.9 FM, ESPN, and Odyssey Sports Station. The Gabe Kuhn Show, weekdays from 4 p.m. till 7 p.m.
From the 305 in Miami, the artist for naming rights to Florida International Stadium. It will be now known as Pitbull Stadium for the next 5 years. Now, what came with this? Obviously, naming rights for Pitbull Stadium. Voli 305 Vodka will be sold at all games. Two suites for up to 40 people for Pitbull when he shows up to games. He will be able to use the venue for 10 days a year. And he gets the official title of official entrepreneur of FIU Athletics. This is pretty cool. This is pretty cool, I gotta say. And it opens up some possibilities. And I think even here in Memphis, I know Simmons Bank just signed it, but I see it now. Memphis football huddling up, ready to run out of the Tiger Head. And you start to hear it. And Project Pat appears out of nowhere. And maybe the rest of 3-6 Mafia, I don't know. Then they run out, led by 3-6 Mafia and Project Pat. Project Pat Stadium is what it's known as. Then they run up to their suites with 40 people. This is a new age of college football. This is phenomenal. This is a great opportunity right out there. Now, I know Simmons Bank has Liberty Stadium for now. But maybe when that gets done, we have Project Pat Stadium, Project Pat Liberty Bowl on the way. Once all the phases are done, I can see it now, Connor. Do you see it?
Oh, I see it.
I hope I painted the picture for the people out there well enough.
Will we call it the Pat?
Yeah. Come play
Pat.
At the Pat. Come play at the Pat. That's beautiful. That's beautiful stuff.
Did you know you can listen to all your favorite 92.9 FM ESPN shows anytime with the free Odyssey app featuring Rewind? Miss the Gabe Kuhn Show? Just rewind and listen whenever you want. Don't forget to ask your smart speaker to play 92.9 ESPN.
When you were young, all you wanted in the summer was an ice cream truck to roll by. Now, you just can't wait for the Harbor Freight parking lot sale to roll around. And it'll be here this weekend. Maybe you're looking to fill up that tool chest. Maybe you're looking for a tool chest to fill up. You'll save money either way. Whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight. Valid until August 18th, 2024. While supplies last. Limitations apply.
Meet Cheryl.
Hey.
She's on vacation and lost in the moment. Unfortunately, so is her Chase debit card.
It's got to be somewhere.
Maybe she lost it at salsa night.
These skirts should have pockets.
Or maybe she lost it at Pilates.
3 and 2 and...
But she's not worried. With the Chase mobile app, she can lock her card till it turns up. Tools that help protect. One bank that puts you in control. Visit Chase.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.